The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services, it's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, it is officially the greatest Tuesday of Final Weekend. It's time for the True Wealth Show. I am stoked for this show because today the markets got stoked in their own ways.
The markets have been getting stoked for a minute here.
Markets are definitely feeling it, and we are going to talk about it today. Welcome. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me in studio today,
Matt Dixon.
And we are, of course, if you're unfamiliar, well, I don't know where you've been, but you can grab podcasting and get caught up on it. But we are talking all kinds of things financial, of course, the modicum of the True Wealth Show, right? Money's how we trade our time. True wealth is the memories and relationships we build along the way. But you know what? Money does make it easier, and I think it's okay to talk about it.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, we don't want money to be what we serve, but it's just going to matter. So, and apparently money matters in our economy because, you know, there's been squawk, and now the squawk is over. We've officially crossed the threshold, and we are now seeing, ta-da, tariffs.
Yeah.
So that was the biggie. That was discussion. Like, was this just jawboning to get people to the negotiation table or not? Well, we're about to kind of play that game out in real time, aren't we?
Yeah, we are now in it, right?
Like, yep, yep.
There was some speculation out of the gate that maybe Trump was using this as a negotiating tool to try and, you know, get some of the stuff that he wanted done, like, you know, border security, and we could go down the laundry list of all the different things he wanted. But the reality is, now they're effective, and they're here. And
exactly.
So we got to sit here and try and process this because, hey, what do we do for a living? We watch the markets. We invest money. And how does this play out? We know that the markets didn't like it, right?
Like, no, they did not.
They did not like this. But
That's not really surprising anybody, though, is it?
No. I mean, because like, think about it. What does the tariff mean? It means that trade routes have been disrupted. It means that suppliers that had been established might not be as established anymore, right? Like, buyers come and go depending on pricing, and when there are tariffs involved, it changes the price. So,
yeah,
we gotta kind of reorchestrate this thing.
Yeah, and here's the reality is very simple. It's going to make it more expensive. Right, I think At the core of this, you know, we can talk about, like, you know, how did we get here? Why did we get here? Or whatever. But, you know, what does it mean? I don't think that the markets know yet. This is an example today of the markets having to reprice things now, right?
Mm-hmm.
At first, there were, you know, a couple different pathways that we could take. You know, maybe there's talk about the tariffs, but we'll kick the can down the road and it'll get people to the negotiating table. And then it was, well, no, they're going to be implemented. And then there's going to be retaliatory tariffs. And then we start to kind of play this out, and what does it mean? Now, at the core of all of this, I think there are a couple of big picture items that are relevant, right? I think one of the big picture items is competition fair?
Yeah, I mean, in a free market, you have to be able to have competition, right? Otherwise, like, the government controls pricing, and then you're kind of at the mercy of the government.
Well, in a sense. So when I say, is the competition fair? Let's take a look at all of the markets. And if I were to start with, you know, this is the loaded question of the day. Hey, Matt, do we have a free market?
I'll go out on a limb and say yeah.
Okay, and we are going to disagree out of the gate.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Right?
Elaborate.
Now, we have a free-ish market. But there's all kinds of parameters. If we had a free market, you could just go put a shovel in the dirt and build whatever house you wanted. Right?
Okay.
But we don't. That's a regulated activity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if it's not free, then there are regulations associated. Now, somebody could argue, oh, no, you're free to build it, though. You just have to free to build it within those regulations. Oh, okay. But there's going to be safety protocols and standards that you're going to have to follow. you know, if you want to go manufacture something and sell it to other people, you can't just do that, right? There's licenses that are required. There are regulations to follow for that. Layers and layers and layers of regulations.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound very free to me.
Okay.
That sounds like a curated marketplace, right? You know, if that is the case, then the question is, how free of a market do we have?
Well, as free as it's really going to be, right? Like, I mean, you have to have governments in place. Although, I mean, it's just
so I agree with you right? So I don't believe in a purely free market, and there's some good reasons for it. Right?
Well,
and,
if there's no regulation, there's no consumer protection at the end of the day.
Well,
right?
And it's not just that, because one could argue buyer beware. But I would say if there's no regulation, then eventually the market becomes not a marketplace anymore. It becomes a monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And once it's a monopoly, it's no longer a market. Then it's an extortion or hostage situation. Right.
Yeah.
If there's only one provider, then they can charge whatever they want. Right. And so that's kind of the issue. Now, we do part of the markets we have patent protection, right? Gives you a period of time where if you develop something and spend the money to do it, you have a right to have sort of a temporary monopoly on that product.
Yeah.
Right. As a way to recover your costs, as a way to gain competitive advantage. So somewhere along the line, somebody thought, well, we shouldn't make a position where a small provider has to go against a financial juggernaut and they can't afford to compete, so they just get bought out every time or they just get steamrolled.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So patents became a way to protect intellectual property. Okay? Well, is protecting intellectual property free market? We accept it, right? But it's technically no. I mean, like, if you want to knock something off, well, that'd be the ultimate free market, is no protection of intellectual property.
Yeah. I think the biggest area where you see, like, the market not really be free is when you sanction countries and then you completely, like, end a trade route, right? And we did that to somewhat of a degree with Russia, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When this whole thing in Ukraine started, we're like, well, a lot of your ability to import and export is gone. And so,
yeah, sanctions that, and embargoes.
That section of the market is no longer free, right? These tariffs are definitely going to play a huge effect, though, on where stuff is being purchased and where it's manufactured.
Where it's manufactured is mm-hmm. the biggie, right?
Yep.
This is probably not immediately obvious to people, but tariffs are protective to domestic labor.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if one of the biggest input costs is the labor cost of building things for a business or doing things for a business, right? If that weren't the case, then why did we have so many call centers go overseas, right? Where companies were literally willing to risk having folks that weren't necessarily even fluent in a tech support language function as tech support. It's a cost decision.
Yeah.
Right? And so why does so much manufacturing go overseas? It's a cost decision, okay? But if you put a 25% tariff on the majority of things in the marketplace, then what you've done is said, well, you may be able to, through the lack of regulation or worker rights or whatever way that you can in your economy, you may be able to have a much lower labor cost than the United States can, but we will level the field by charging a tariff to make your product more expensive so that domestically, it is more competitive. And then what happens? You see companies like Toyota say, okay, well, let's build a factory in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take the product that we've designed in Japan, but we'll manufacture it here using domestic labor to avoid the tariffs.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's the strategy behind some of this. Is this idea of taking things that are otherwise not as level a playing field, because the input costs are different in different geographies around the world, and saying, well, then let's use the blunt instrument of tariffs to level the playing field.
Okay. Yeah, there's definitely some of that where that's like the actual focus. I think there's more to it also, like in addition to.
Well, I'm really curious about the more to it portion of it. I think that our listeners, you know, ought to be curious about that too. Before we get to the more to it, I just want to kind of have a couple of parting thoughts on, like, is it good, bad, or otherwise? I think it's to be determined. But if you think
like
about
how deep are the ripple effects of this?
Yeah, it's how many orders of the effect, right? Because a tariff, I don't know that the tariffs have been strategically put in place to sort of level the cost of labor. I think that's the indirect or, you know, several sort of derivatives down the road as to how that matters. I think they are sort of geopolitical in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think it's worth talking about those and some other things. I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking, you know, why don't we grab our first break? That'll give us a chance to come back. And on the flip side, I really do want to hear your take on this, Matt.
Okay.
So what other considerations for these tariffs do we need to be looking at? And for the rest of you guys listening, we're going to get into what does this mean for you. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where if you were just tuning in, you can catch the beginning on the podcast tomorrow, right? So we'll get you caught up, but we're talking tariffs today. Matt, yeah. I just laid out the case that I think tariffs are a way to sort of level the playing field when you have unequal labor costs,
right?
Is a biggie, right?
Yep.
But you indicated to our listeners there's more to the story.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. I mean, I love numbers, right? Former math person. And I.
Is there ever a former math person? Or are you just like a recovering math person?
Recovering.
Still a math person?
Yeah.
That you're like hiding?
Yeah, that one.
Just so you know, this profession is still math.
It is. Yeah. And curiosity kills the cat, right? And what better thing do I have to do on a Monday night than start researching the actual numbers behind these tariffs? Because I just wanted to know. Because my gut feeling was like, I don't like these tariffs because, like, it should, in theory, just make everything more expensive and the consumer gets, like, the price.
I'm breaking out my abacus right now. I can tell I'm going to have to do math here. All right. Matt can do it in his head. I don't have that in my wheelhouse. So
I can make the numbers real easy for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's make it easy. So I did just a straight-up 25% tariff and looked at how much are we like exporting versus importing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we were to basically look at 25% on Canada, Mexico, China, and the EU, because Trump has angled this, right? Like,
right.
He said, like, hey, we're starting with these three, but Europe, you're not off the hook. So what would the total U.S. tariff revenue be if we were to implement this 25% tariff, which here we just did it, $490 billion.
So total?
That's revenue into the country. But then you also have to look at the other side of this and say, how much are these other countries going to collect if they do the same thing in tariff?
So are you saying that we do $2 trillion in imports, roughly?
I can go back and look at the numbers. But yeah, I mean,
simple math on this one, right? You just said it's about a half of a $1 trillion in revenue at a 25% tax rate. I just sort of, you know, divided that by 25%. That sort of says about $2 trillion in net trade deficit. So we're bringing in $2 trillion of goods and services, and we tack on to that another 25% increase.
Right, but how much do we actually send out? This is where it gets interesting. How much are we actually exporting, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at that, so what would the tariff revenue collection be by these other countries? So how much, like, if Canada slaps 25% tariff on us, Mexico, the EU, China.
Well, it's comical, the imbalance, right? I mean, we're doing like 6-1 or something in terms of trade.
Yeah. So, like, you'd look at it and it's like, well, that tariff revenue, we'd be getting charged $299 billion. But do the math, $490 billion minus $299 billion, that's a net positive $191 billion.
Well, and it's weirder than
for
that.
For the U.S.
Pardon me. It's weirder than that if you consider that, you know, where's the tax getting paid, right? The U.S. government's not paying the tax for tariffs, right?
Right.
It's being borne by the people that are, so the companies that pay the tax on it build it into the price of the product they're exporting. So I think we have to consider the fact that these numbers become moving targets, because if you increase the cost by 25%, you've just raised the cost, the input cost, which when you're changing the supply or demand components of a curve, it'll move, right? So higher input costs, there can be lower demand. So you should move fewer units now, mm-hmm. which means that you wouldn't expect to have the same gross volume any longer. Okay, so you would expect a right. reduction in total consumed goods imported because the increase in price.
Right.
The question is, does the consumer then pivot to domestic sources at the same level? Do they fully substitute or do they simply go without because of the change in demand? This is the idea that, like, well, if beef gets too expensive, then you pivot to chicken. But if chicken's still too expensive, you just pivot to something else entirely. And so beef sales don't net the same amount, right? Everything goes down a little bit because everybody substituted out of that marketplace.
Right. Right?
Just demand destruction, if you will. So I do think that that is a reasonable thing to factor in, is does demand destruction slow overall economic activity? Right?
Because it's a good question.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not, it's not a, intended as a buzzkill toward you. I think it's for our listeners to say, hey, you know, there's going to be a period of time that's going to take for the market to adjust to these prices. Mm-hmm. And I expect it to be jarring.
Yeah, it has to be, right? Mm-hmm. Because this is radically going to shift trade routes. Like, there's just no other way around it, because companies have to figure out how to stay profitable. And when you start to, you know, move stuff around like this, it plays a huge impact.
These are big numbers.
Yeah.
Right? They're big numbers.
We're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Right. The crazy thing about it to me, though, is that let's say that you bring in half a trillion dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at our total economic output and it's something like, I don't know, it's over 20 trillion.
Right.
Right. So you're bringing in maybe 5% in taxes. If you slow the economy down, do you lose more in the sort of collected revenue through income taxes than you gain in tariffs? Right. There's this tax theory called the Laffer curve. It's probably not super appropriately applied here, but it's the idea that there's a maximum amount of collectible tax. Mm-hmm. And when you add too much to it, it starts to slow the economic activity, and then you actually net collect less.
Yeah.
Right. So there's this optimized amount where you can take this much out of the system without slowing it down.
Yeah.
But no more than. And
right.
So the argument that I hear historically of, well, taxes used to be way higher and we had a more robust middle class and this, that, and the other. We're not looking at the same structural things. They're cherry picking data mm-hmm. to suggest that that's how it would work again. And I think that you have to look at the historical context and the structural elements, the global economy when you look at those numbers. We just don't.
I think that, and this is going to sound kind of counter to what we've been saying so far, but I think we'll look back at this and it'll be more of a speed bump than anything, right? Like, I don't think the sky's falling out from this, because you got to think about a $1 billion company, for example, right? Or even a $600 million company. Overnight, they're not just going to find a new supplier, right? Like, trade will continue to go on. They're going to be looking for different opportunities, exploring new opportunities, but this is going to kind of be, I think, especially starting out, kind of pay the toll keeper as you go.
Sure.
And, yeah.
Well, and keep in mind that this isn't just a revenue instrument. This is a policy instrument and a mm-hmm. persuasion instrument.
Right.
Right? I've said this before on the show, but, you know, the government puts in place penalties or incentives in order to encourage behaviors, right? If the government doesn't want people to have more money, they will tax it more. And the money won't be there, right? And this was a sort of a Ronald Reagan philosophy back in his days as an actor. He used to say, you know, I'll do 3 movies a year, but I won't do 4. And they said, well, why is that? He said, because the 4th movie is essentially me working for free. Because if I earn more than a certain threshold of income, all of it goes to the government. And so there's not enough incentive. And that was a time when it was like above 70% tax rate at the top of the bracket. So it's like there's a disincentive. And so we essentially cap productivity because folks get... they realize the diminishing marginal return of additional effort, right?
Yeah.
And so that same thing can occur in the economy, right? Is if we tax things, it will slow them down. And if you slow them down enough, it will become sort of deflationary. You know, there are other problems that it creates, right? Initially, this should be inflationary, right? All the prices should be higher,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the price of goods and services will go up. The problem is that incomes are unlikely to go up at the same pace. And so you'll see a shift to domestic, and you'll see people try to be creative when it happens. But, you know, you will see things that get more expensive, and we already are. You know, and if you're out there pounding the table saying, yeah, look at the price of eggs, you know, there's that's some other stuff internally. Like, eggs are not really a tariff thing. They're mostly produced here in the United States. But, like, avocados, yeah, that'll probably go up.
Yeah. You know, you'll get some, like, really weird ones. Soybeans, I think, have been in the news regarding tariffs. And there are certain things that are very, very sensitive to this stuff that, like, can radically be changed overnight by tariffs.
Well, my biggest concern, well, not biggest, one of my biggest concerns is the disruption of stable supply chains, right? When you really radically escalate the input costs of goods that are, even if they're produced here in the United States, but you have to get parts from somewhere else, then that's going to hit the consumer. It's going to get passed through. And you know, I don't care what your political persuasion is or your economic persuasion or anything else. I'll just pound the table and tell you you're wrong. If you're like, say, well, corporations need to pay their fair share. And I'm like, don't be a bonehead. Corporations don't stay in existence if the tax was too high. Even if they're paying it, they pass it through in the form of higher prices to the consumer. Right? The consumer ultimately is the one that bears the cost. And the tariff will be no different. Right. So let's not be naive about that. It's just, OK, if we're going to tax it, we're going to add a layer of cost. That layer of cost will be borne by the people buying it. It's just how it works. So how does this ripple through the system? Right. I think that's, I mean, we've established great. Yeah. Whether we like it or not, the tariffs are here. I like what you said that, you know, this is something that we work around and it's just going to cause the markets to adapt.
Yeah.
I've always think if I just try to empty a bucket of water into a slatted box, the water will pour through. It will find ways out, right? It will move around and it will just find its way because that's what liquid does. And that's kind of how capitalism works. Mm-hmm. Like close a door, open a window, then it'll go out the window.
Yeah.
And so it will change behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Which ones? Oh, now we're getting interesting, right? Like, oh, man. Yeah, I don't know how to predict all of that.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you start looking at how, because the markets are trying to predict the future, right?
Sure.
And I think it's interesting if you just look at all the sectors, and since this has kind of become newsworthy, what sectors have really been hit and where has money been flowing? And I think, you know, it's pretty safe to say that consumer discretionary has really been hit hard recently.
And I'm
going to
guess that like certain tourism, things like that, I mean, just a lot, because you expect the people to have less discretionary income as prices really kind of get knocked around.
Yeah. So discretionary has really been hit in financials today. Last time I checked took a pretty big hit. So
yeah, it's just, I think there are a lot of areas of the market. Look at anything that's likely to experience, what's not going to be affected by this is the better question, right? Mm-hmm. It would have to be fairly domestic and fairly insulated. I might suggest utility companies. You know, they're relatively insulated. They probably have to import certain parts from overseas, but it's probably not. But I think about even domestic manufacturing. We had a chip shortage during COVID, and so a bunch of vehicles couldn't get off the production line because we couldn't get microprocessors for them.
Yeah.
And while that's not the case, I think it will be a price function. At some point, the consumer does run out of money.
And I think we're rapidly like approaching that line.
I think we are too. And it's, I don't have any way to quantify this other than through my intuition. But
yeah,
it just seems like life has gotten more expensive faster than the incomes can keep up.
I'll go out on a limb because, you know, we haven't actually waved that recession flag yet. But just looking at all the charts and stuff, I think that within the next 2 months, it'll like be official. They're going to say, oh, we're in a recession. We'll see if it happens. But
yeah. Or are we in a phantom recession, right? I mean, you know, this is one of those where, well, you know what? Here's a good spot. Let's do this. I'm looking at the time. Let's grab a break. We'll do that. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about phantom recession, and then I want to talk a little bit about phantom bear markets. and how those connect.
That
stick
could be
around.
Interesting.
Yep, we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where Matt and I are talking tariffs today, and the gloves have come off a little bit.
They have.
You know, this is an interesting animal, right? You know, there's the why that are tariffs in place. And, you know, I'll just say one of the most difficult parts about this right now is to try to extract the partisanship from the policy, right?
Yeah.
Because right now what I hear is a lot of folks that view this through the lens of this is a Trump tariff.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you have to assess the merits of the tariff through the lens of the body politic.
Right.
And I think that's a shame, because I think what it does is it really forces us away from thinking about this in what's really going on and policy to, you know, back to partisanship. And it's just so bitter right now.
It is.
I'm so over it. The reality is that in all of the deals that exist out there, it sort of depends on which camp that you live in, right? If you are the party in a deal that gets what you perceive to be the short end of the deal, then you're going to resent it. And if you're the party that gets the good end of the deal, then you're going to call it good. The question is, can you get to deals where both parties feel like they're in reasonably good standing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my sense is that one of the challenges politically in the United States is that we elect new leadership every 2 to 6 years, right? Depending on where you're at. But presidents every four. And what that does when you're trying to do long-term trade deals is it keeps them fairly destabilized.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing lasts a long time when you keep resetting the body politic every 4 years or so. And so you get short-term thinking a lot when you do that. But the other issue is, you know, it's more convenient if the deal doesn't look that good to then blame the other team. Right? So what we do is short-term thinking and blame shifting.
Right.
Instead of trying to develop policies that ultimately produce good outcomes for as many as possible.
Yeah.
And that drives me bananas.
Right.
Right. I'm like, come on, folks. Like, if your whole idea is to pound the table and scream tariffs are bad, said yes. However, so are trade, like really imbalanced trade deals.
Let's just say it for what it is, right? Let's get down to the brass tacks of this. No one, like you just said, tariffs don't feel good, right? Because at the end of the day, we might have to pay more for a little bit. But I think this is a lot bigger and a lot deeper than what people are really realizing. This is a trade war, right? Like,
yeah.
Don't underestimate the word war in this.
Yep.
And it's being waged for a very, very simple reason, right? And that is the United States has largely become an importer, right? Like, this country used to be very, very, like, industrial.
It was the major manufacturer on the planet.
It was.
Especially post-World War II.
Yep. And I think we need to, like, hit the history books for a second and look back on what does history tell us about countries or civilizations that start to rely heavily on imports, right? Like, it doesn't end well. Like, look back in time. The Roman Empire, right? Like, go back to that.
You know what? You're about to become a YouTube sensation by talking about the Roman Empire.
Well, I mean, think about it. No one thought that the Romans would ever fall, right? But they were getting all their grain from Egypt. The economy shifted, and you can just follow it, right? They end up falling. Like, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but
it took 1,000 years, but
it
you're
did.
Right.
The Spanish Empire, right? Like, it happened there. They were one of the wealthiest nations. They had a lot of gold and silver imports. They failed. The Ottoman Empire failed. The UK post-World War II. Like, the United Kingdom was very, very industrial, and they phased that out and started relying upon Japan and Germany.
Well, like, now, in their defense, everything was blown up.
Sure, but, I mean, just look at, like, the manufacturing. Like, if you don't have manufacturing and you just rely on everything from everyone else, that doesn't end well, right? And so there's a major trade deficit right now.
Yeah, yeah. This is, by the way, why I started today talking about labor, right? Because so much of this starts with when you can export labor, if you really want to, oh, man, am I going to go here? I guess I'm going to go here for a sec. If you look historically, there's always been a labor class that's exploited, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order to build something to really high, right? I mean, the United States was no different. There were periods of time when the United States had slave labor, but there's also been periods of time where we had to implement government laws for workers' rights protection because it was so unsafe and so exploitative in nature, right? And today that's where unions originally formed too. And then we sort of matured into legal protections that now standardize worker safety and so forth. And so the push for unions has changed, but what does it do? It alters permanently at that point the cost of labor inputs. And so post-World War II, you look at, well, what is the labor cost or labor availability? And then so there's this historical context for why it might have been pushed away. But if the point is that, well, it did get pushed offshore and it never came back, still valid regardless, right? I mean, I'm not saying there's no right or wrong to this one other than it definitely happened. The question is why?
Yeah. Well, I think you just got to look at, like, where have we been and where are we now, right? And I think we have a national security crisis because 80%+ of our chip production is not in this country. Like, there's a reason that the U.S. government keeps throwing blank checks at companies like Intel. It's because we're trying to bring some chip production back inside of our borders. Like, as AI continues to grow bigger and these wars that we're seeing, like trade wars, I think we're going to see a tech war at some point. Like, as we continue to advance, we've got to be able to rely on things being built here. And we have outsourced everything. We're making our vehicles in Mexico. Like, stuff isn't being made here. And at a certain point, you don't have the job base to support the goods that you're buying. And that is our biggest concern.
Do you think that is a tactical move by the Trump administration?
It has to be.
So right now the idea is put these tariffs in place as quickly as possible, force the manufacturing base back here and try to do it before the 4-year mark so that the tough news is absorbed in the system already and then it gets, you know, the traction is already occurring and
100%.
You're spooling up at that point, and so you're taking momentum into year 4.
I think it's that, and I think that the administration wants to monetize the deficit. Like, we have all of the playing cards in our hand. We are still importing at a crazy rate. We still have the money to keep buying. Before the house of cards collapses, bring the manufacturing back and capitalize on the trade deficit monetarily, and do it before it's too late. So that's where I think we're at.
Okay. So help me out for a second and help our listeners out. When you say that you think that they want to monetize the debt, I think I know what you mean, but I want the
listeners to hear. The trade deficit.
Monetize the trade deficit.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm putting you on the spot here because I'm not quite sure I follow what that means.
Well, if you just look at how much is going out and how much is going in. And I mean, I guess we kind of talked about it earlier. So yeah, the companies can be paying the tariff fees, right? Like the company that's manufacturing. But when you start to like add up who's paying it and like where is that going, I think a lot of that money filters its way back into the country.
Well, I guess that was my point earlier though. If ultimately, the consumer is paying for it. So on our imports, and we're a big importer, so we're taxing our own population because...
But you're also...
The other countries, they're...
You're taxing the other countries heavier than you're taxing your own people.
Well, it makes their product more expensive, right? So who bears the cost of the more expensive product? We do as consumers. The idea is then we'll substitute for the products that are made domestically because they'll likely be the same or cheaper. If that's the idea behind it, then okay, then you can force the consumer still to be buying something more expensive because of the tariff, but it'll just be domestically manufactured.
Right. But at the end of the day, who gets all of the tax revenue from all the stuff being made here?
From the stuff being made here?
Right. Like if the shift is that more stuff is made in our borders, right? Like
right.
The government then has a larger tax base.
If we can reduce the trade deficit, then
yeah.
Theoretically, if we get the rest of the world to buy our goods and services, then that would generate more net revenue
right.
from the rest of the world as a tax base.
Yeah, I think we're saying the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I do think that there's a big push by, and this is sort of partisan, but I think the Trump administration is really big on trying to get the rest of the world to start paying more equitably into the systems that we're all sort of co-oping together.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you look at everything from the United Nations to
right.
NATO and so forth, and like the United States is always sort of the bank for these things.
Yeah.
And the question is like, well, why? Especially when we're kind of using monopoly money. If we're printing money to do it, then is it really there? And so why are we the ones that are monetizing that portion, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, interesting points. Well, look, I'm looking at the clock. We're running along. Let's grab our last break.
Okay.
When we come back, let's talk about how does this affect investors and what can we do about it? So stick around. I know you're going to want to hear that stuff. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave and Matt in studio. Matt.
Yeah.
We got tariffs.
Yes, we do.
What do investors do?
I think you don't do anything rash and you don't do anything too radical, right? Like, I can't tell you how many times people have asked me, I heard that ad for converting my entire IRA to gold in a vault somewhere. And I'm not saying necessarily don't do it, but I'm saying don't do it.
I know you're not supposed to give advice
right.
on the air, but what I'm saying is that there you better do your homework because
that's,
people just don't understand. Like going into physical gold, there's a cost to get into physical gold. There's a cost to get out of physical gold. There's a cost to maintain retirement plans that have non-traditional assets in them. There's a cost to physically custody and protect it. There's going to be costs associated with annual valuations.
Yeah.
And then how are you going to take mandatory distributions from that retirement plan when you get older when you got an asset that's illiquid? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a train wreck
don't
of things
do,
to deal with.
Don't do the rash thing, right? Like, people love to hit the panic button. And
yeah.
it's typically, like, how you end up in your worst financial situation
yes.
possible. So,
well,
like,
let's play a game, Matt. Let me ask you
okay.
a question. Okay.
Yeah.
First, let's say that there's kind of two big schools of thought on these tariffs, right? One of them is this is just a tool to get people to the negotiation table. And the other is, nope, this is really a long-term shift in policy and philosophy.
Right.
And it can be both.
I'll tell
right?
you what I do in both.
Okay, if well, it, I want to ask you the
yeah.
question of, like, let's say that there's just, the tariffs just are, okay?
Like they stick?
They stick. Let's because mm-hmm. that's, to me, is the most relevant because it's the one that's the most scary.
Right.
Right? So I want to talk to our listeners about, let's just say the tariffs are persistent.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think one ought do?
Well, I would... Are you asking the question of, like, how would I invest or,
no,
like, not that specific?
Well, we can talk about, but let's keep this high level. And
okay.
keep in mind, Matt is not about to give you advice. We're going to talk about what are the philosophies that are going to guide you and what are the things that you're going to sort of accept as things that you need to be aware of and behaviors that you think will be true if
gotcha.
Tariffs persist.
I mean... Tell me if I'm going the right direction and stop me if you are like, Matt, you're going down
Matt,
a rabbit
Matt,
trail.
You can have whatever opinions you want at this
yeah.
point. That's the beauty of talk radio.
Okay.
Right? Go for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I'm thinking that the tariffs are here to stay, right, I'm going to assume that inflation is going to be peskier than what we thought, right?
Okay.
So generally, look at the areas that suffer if rates can't come down, right? Like financial sectors would, you know, like money isn't moving in the system, right?
Yep.
In the same degree.
Especially community banks that don't have a lot of margin.
Right.
Like, tough.
Yeah. So you got to just wave a caution flag. That would be a concern. And then, you know, you asked the other side of that too. You know, what happens if they're not going to stick around? Well, then you look at the market pulling back 7-8% and you're like, maybe it's a buying opportunity, right? Like, mm-hmm. maybe this is an overreaction. So I think you just need to kind of follow yourself down the trail of, like, who benefits? Well, maybe if tariffs are here to stay and we industrialize more and we're building more facilities here in the U.S., maybe there are companies that will benefit from that industrialization movement, and you can go buy that company that stands to benefit from building more facilities.
Yeah,
right?
Let me ask this a leading question.
Sure.
Right? The leading question of, I guess, how does the market price this in?
It guesses into the future.
Right. Well, I mean, it certainly it's going to guess, but mm-hmm. if you're thinking about the market's going to have to make some make some presumptions about increased cost of goods.
Right.
Perhaps it's
in
a
theory,
little bit less sale.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about like the consumer too. How's the consumer going to adapt to higher prices?
Well, jobs are going to pay more, right? Like inflation is going to hit. Like they're going to readjust Social Security probably. Like it gets baked into this thing. But what you need to focus on is the fact that historically equities outpace inflation, and the number one thing you wouldn't want to do if everything starts to cost more is just be completely sitting there in cash and having your cash erode to everything becoming more valuable,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's the one thing you don't want is to be completely out of everything, because you can't save faster than goods and services go up.
I've always said if we're going to be in an inflationary environment, you want to own assets.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Assets reprice. Okay, so consider this for a minute. This is a more partisan comment, right? I'm not really taking a side. I'm just saying that this is kind of the current administration. What if the idea is to reallocate resources out of the public sector back into the private sector at large? This is a game of how do we shrink the government, reduce the amount of tax, and push more back into the private sector, which long-term
creates
jobs.
Kind of like Reagan economics, in a sense.
Well, no, it's not so much trickle-down as a concept, right? But it's this concept of smaller government and more private sector and faster-moving economy, and the private sector becomes the employer of choice more so than the government.
Well, I mean, I definitely think that's where we're headed.
Well, if that's philosophically the idea, right, then what you say, well, you start with tariffs and then you start with this DOGE stuff where it's like, well, you go in and you clean house and you resize the government pretty aggressively. You know, and the federal government gets smaller, it pushes stuff back to the states more, but it, in theory, can lower the tax burden because it's carrying less expense,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, the fact that we've got a huge debt's a different issue. But you hinted at something earlier, right? Monetization, right? If we have an inflationary environment, might we be able to still collect more raw dollars in the system because the inflated dollars are going to be paying back a fixed price with, you know, deflated dollars, okay? So monetization does make debt recovery potentially easier if you can keep tax receipts coming in. And so if you can shrink the government, inflation doesn't necessarily hurt if you're trying to monetize and get some of that debt retired. And you're trying to push the private sector into more productivity, then the private sector has more resources to pay taxes with. So if the private sector got bigger but paid a smaller percentage of tax at a level, but because the whole pie got bigger, there was more gross tax collection, a little bit of inflation, while painful in the short term, may ultimately help to balance some of the debt issues.
Yeah.
Now, this sounds like a lot of economic hocus pocus to you, I get it, because that's all it is to me right now, is a theory too. We got to see if it could ever even work. But it is an interesting thing to think about, and it's something that we as an investment management group and a financial planning group consider when we talk about how to manage money for our clients and how to navigate this.
True. Right?
And so, you know, the big keys to me are you got to own assets. Mm-hmm. You want to be inflation hedged. And you don't want to be in something where you're going to risk purchasing power. And that's the idea. Again, in an inflation environment, it's not just like I can put money in a coffee can and bury it.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't think to just buy gold is the automatic solution either. Right? I'm not saying you shouldn't have gold. I don't think Bitcoin's the magic solve. I don't think any of those are the magic solve. I still think a broadly diversified strategy that participates in the economy.
Yeah.
Because even Bitcoin doesn't participate in the economy. What it participates in is deregulated, decentralized, yeah, and a finite amount of it. Okay? So it still behaves like a commodity, even though it's digital. So if you're looking for better ways to, or you're looking for ways to reevaluate what you were doing and you'd like some help, how might they find us, Matt?
Yeah, give us a phone call, 541-375-0898, or just go to the website at littlejohnfs.com. You can chat us, email us, get a hold of us however you want.
Right. And, you know, there's no pressure on this one. We're always happy to have folks come in. So, you know, if you're looking for a second opinion, we promise not to bite. All right. But look, I hear the music, so I guess it's time. Tariffs in the books, and so is this show. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.